sad to miss it, but you know, such is the life of a college student. Anyway, we had a wonderful time. It was a nice visit, which made it all the more surprising that on Saturday night, my daughter, I was in one room, she came into the room and she was crying and she was holding her phone. And I asked her what was wrong. And she said, well, I've been just talking to Hannah. Hannah is Mehrav's best friend since they were 2 years old. That long. It's one of these amazing friendships. And Hannah was telling her that in the rabbi's house, three doors down, they were having a Hanukkah celebration, and somebody broke in with a knife. You know this now, we all know, right? Somebody broke into the house, and horrible things were happening. And so they were literally there, right there. I mean, they weren't in the house, thank God, but they were right in that. They were part of that. Her family is a part of that community. And you have to understand, Mehrav grew up with this kid. She's like a sister, and her family is like her second family there. And, you know, so Hannah was trying to be a comfort to her younger brothers at that moment. And Mehrav was there to try to be the support system for Hannah going through this. And Hannah was crying hysterically, and it was a really difficult night. So I sat there with her for a long time. And, you know, there was moments where, you know, we kept checking our own. I was checking my phone. We were trying to see if there was some news about, because we were hearing about it before it hit the news. And, of course, it became international story. And we were scared because we didn't know if they were going to catch this guy. And it was terrifying, you know. It was a terrifying moment before they knew that they caught him. But mostly, I just sat with Mehrav, and she cried. And I hugged her, and I held her. And what words can you say in a moment like that? You know, here I'm sitting here witnessing my child who's experiencing the horrors of anti-Semitism, not as something she heard about that happened in the past, not as something that happens to other people, but as something that for her truly hits home. What words do you have to say in a moment like that? There's only silence. How do you respond? So, folks, you know, this is where Torah really comes into play. This is where the insight, the wisdom of our tradition and our people really fills in that gap, in that silence. In this week's Parsha, for example, we have this powerful communication from God to Jacob. Jacob, he's about to head down to the land of Egypt to be reunited with his son Joseph for the first time in all these years. And God comes to Jacob in a dream and says two very important words for all of us to hold on to right now. Al tira. What does that mean?
Don't be afraid.
Al tira mirda mitzrayma. Don't be afraid to go down to Mitzrayim, because I will make your descendants there into a great nation, a goy gadol, a great nation, and I will be with you. And Joseph himself will close your eyes when the time for you to die comes. Al tira. Now, of course, the typology of Jacob, Yisrael, right? This is, he represents the Jewish people going into exile, leaving our land and being at the whim and mercy of other nations. There are good pharaohs and there are bad pharaohs. And you never know. So God's message to Jacob is his message to the Jewish people in exile. Al tira. Don't be afraid. Very, very powerful message. The Midrashic tradition goes deeper into this and says that that dream of God speaking and saying Al tira is actually a reflection of a real-time secret communication that happened right then and there between Joseph and his father, Jacob. Here's the secret communication. So the brothers come back from Egypt, and they say, Joseph is alive! And you remember what Jacob's initial reaction is? Just disbelief. He doesn't believe them. But he doesn't believe them at all. And then it goes on and says, and when they told Jacob what happened to them. And then Jacob saw the wagons that Joseph had sent along with them from Egypt. Suddenly Jacob said, "Oh, Joseph ben Chai, my son Joseph is alive. Let's go. Let's get out of here. I need to see him before I die." So the rabbis asked the question, why? What suddenly convinced him that Joseph was alive when he didn't believe them just moments before? And Rashi brings the Midrashic tradition, and he explains that Jacob saw the wagons. That was it. Why? The Hebrew word, anyone know the Hebrew word for a wagon? Agala. Agala. Now here's the Midrash. Bear with me. There's a lot of bearing with me you have to do here. The Midrash is that right before Joseph disappeared, he was always studying Torah with his father. And the last piece of Torah that they studied together was the description of the red heifer. Forget the fact that the Torah came later. Don't worry about that part. reading about the red heifer, and one of the words for a heifer, anyone know? Not para, but there's another word. Egel or egla, right? So the Hebrew letters for egla and agala are the same letters, just different vowels. Ah, says the Midrash. Joseph sent a sign. He sent him the agala for to remind him it's the egla. Ah, that's Joseph. What, a little too far-fetched for you? Come on. Come on. So if that is a little too far-fetched for you, the Kabbalistic tradition comes in and gets very deep and profound about it. Bear with me. So Jacob, we know, has this deep, special connection with Joseph. They are both men of God. They both have they're both dreamers. They're both visionaries. They can see things through their dreams and through their vision that others can't see, explains our Kabbalistic tradition. And the Kedushat Levi talks about this and says they understood something about the nature of redemption from exile, of redemption from suffering. They both understood that there's really two dimensions to redemption from suffering. One is when redemption comes as a direct line, a direct zapping from God from heaven into earth, like when God parted the Red Sea, boom, there it is, a direct line. So that can happen in the world. It's possible. But generally, redemption comes in a different form. Redemption, according to our Kabbalistic tradition, comes in cyclical fashion. It cycles through time and history like a spiral, and that we have to go through different kinds of periods of time, darkness and light, spiraling through. And as you look through that cycle of life and time, you begin to see God's redemption manifesting in the world. That's because of the limitations of this material world. You're bearing with me here? The Hebrew word for a cycle, or actually literally a circle, is?
Igul.
Igul. So sometimes it is a direct line, and here he was showing him these things with big giant wheels. So this is better. It's better. Come on. You got to give it. It's better. Showing him the cycle. That because he was appealing to his vision, that he knew that this is Gamze Latova. This is for the best. We are cycling now through Mitzrayim. This is the wheel of fate is turning. He's saying to his father, this is our time to go down to Mitzrayim. The time has arrived. We've both seen it in our dreams. We both envisioned this. The time has come. I like it a little better. Look, and this is what I taught in shul last week. It's the same concept. We talked about Hanukkah. We talked about Rosh Chodesh. The idea of Rosh Chodesh, or the first sliver of light is returning. The darkness is slowly being replaced in light. And as the moon cycles, it's a reminder that the light will return. That even when darkness comes upon us, the light always returns. It's the same basic teaching again. The problem with that teaching, I talked about this last week also, the problem with this teaching is it can render you rather passive, right? Because you're, okay, well, we're going through dark times, but the light will someday return. Right? So the real clincher here is it comes not from the Midrash, not from the Kabbalah, but from the actual text of the Torah itself. What happens? They come back to Mitzrayim, and Joseph wants the time has come for his brothers to have an audience with Pharaoh. And clearly, Joseph is totally flipping out, anxious about this meeting. Joseph, of course, is this elegant, sophisticated Egyptian, right? He's got all the garb, he's got the language, and then he has his schleppy, dirty brothers, you know, who are coming from Canaan, and they're going to come before Pharaoh, and he really doesn't want them to blow it. So he gives them advice. People remember this story? He gives them advice, and he says, when Pharaoh asks you, what is your occupation? Do not say that you are ro'e tzon. What are ro'e tzon? Shepherd. Don't tell them you're shepherds, because shepherds are to'eva. They are an abomination to the Egyptians. They're the lowest of the low for the Egyptians. Instead, say we are anshe mikne, which means we are breeders of cattle. It's a much nicer way of saying it. So you know how the story goes. Remember this? So the audience happens. Pharaoh says, what's your occupation? And they say, oh, ro'e tzon avadecha. We are shepherds as are our fathers before us. Joseph at that moment is like, don't, right? But how does Pharaoh respond? Pharaoh responds and says, kol eretz Mitzrayim lefanecha. All of Egypt is open to you. Settle where you will. You want Goshen? It's yours. Right? Pharaoh is completely, he's completely great with them. He has no problem with them. In fact, he seems to be rather impressed with them. And that's why he gives them anywhere they want in Mitzrayim. But there's a very profound message here. Right? We have kind of like two typologies getting set up. We have Jacob and Joseph. They're the visionary men of God. They see things from 60,000 feet up. And then there are the brothers who are these earthy, you know, they're not men, they're not visionaries in the same way as Joseph and Jacob. Joseph represents that kind of passive seeing the bigger picture in this narrative, in this moment. He's saying, don't be so, you know, we have to be here in Egypt. This is part of the cycle of history. Don't wear your identity too much on your sleeve. You need to pull back a little bit. The brothers have no concept of what he's talking about, right? They don't even get it. They don't have any shame of who they are. We're shepherds. And at that moment, that was the right thing to do. Joseph was wrong. So this is the age-old tension in how the Jewish people have responded to exile and to the reality of possible persecution and anti-Semitism. Do we wait passively for the Mashiach to come? Or do we take matters into our own hands? Do we live our identity proudly out loud and assert ourselves? Is redemption coming in a circle, or is it coming in a straight line where we take it ourselves? We become that straight line. Which one is it? As you look across the expanse of Jewish history, what can we say? It's both. Both. There are times in our history when the right thing to do was to hide who we are in order to survive. You know, when the Nazis were coming for us, we had to hide. Because that's the only way we could preserve life. But then, founding of the State of Israel, no more hiding, no more passivity. It depends on the moment. So we have to take a look at the moment that we're in and determine who are we Joseph or are we Joseph's brothers? And when we think about this moment, here's my opinion. I'll just share my opinion. You know, this moment is not the same thing as, there's a lot of terrifying similarities to Germany in the 30s, but it's not the same thing. This is America. This is a country that is a multicultural society. This is a country of immigrants. This is a country that has stated values and ideals of giving everybody the right to live in freedom. And in this context, I think we need to be the brothers. and not Joseph. This is not a time to hide. I've been talking to a lot of people over the past several days who are feeling that you know, do we need to, is it safe to go out as, in the world as Jews? The answer is, we have to. We must. You know, there's a rally tomorrow in New York, the No Hate, No Fear rally that's marching across the Brooklyn Bridge. In fact, there's a bus going that the JCRC is sending. So if you can make it, you should go. I wish I could go. I have a bad knee, so I can't go. But if you can, you should go. Because this is the time to live our Jewish identity out loud and strong and tell the world that we're not afraid. You know, we can look back at the Torah and see God saying to Jacob, "Al tirah, don't be afraid." And we can take that to heart. Yes, this period of anti-Semitic uptick, this violence, this hatred, this hate-filled time, it will ultimately pass. That's true. We know this from so many thousands of years of our history. That doesn't mean, though, that we shouldn't take matters into our own hands in this moment. We must, right? We have to take that al tirah that God said to Jacob and make that a message about us to the world, that we are not afraid. We need to let everybody know that we are not afraid to be who we are. So we should be marching in New York across the Brooklyn Bridge and showing and wearing our Yiddishkeit proudly wherever we can, however we can. If you've got a Magen David, wear it. Right? Or whatever it is that you do. Don't be afraid to show up as Jews in the world. Because that's how we can become. We can embody that straight line of God's redemption in the world. So may we be that redemption through our pride and our strength and our fearlessness as the Jewish people in our time, and bring healing to the world.